Radical love, lavish generosity, extravagant forgiveness, inclusive hospitality, compassionate action, selfless service, a passion for justice, creative nonviolence, simple living. Good day, good people. I'm Robert Farrell. This is Coalesce. Thank you for joining me. Coalesce is grounded in both and thinking, heart wisdom, and listening for the common good arising in dialogue, where we are present to presence. Coalesce provides an opportunity to encounter and discover the multiple perspectives that make our beautiful community. May we see with the eyes of our heart. May we love one another with peace and compassion. May all beings come to know the divine presence within. This is episode 27, Non-Dual Thinking. All the great religions of the higher or more mature levels teach a different consciousness, which we call the contemplative mind, the non-dual mind, or the mind of Christ. The levels of spiritual development begin with dualistic, exclusionary, either-or thinking, and become increasingly non-dual, allowing for a deeper, broader, wiser, more inclusive, and loving way of seeing. Non-dualistic thinking presumes you have first mastered dualistic clarity, but also found it insufficient for the really big issues like love, suffering, death, sexuality, God, and any notion of infinity. In short, we need both to see fully and with freedom. Though life itself may move us to deeper levels of non-dual knowing, there are some powerful practices, images, and experience that can serve as catalysts for unitive consciousness. We'll explore many of these from different traditions and teachers. For example, the foundational Christian doctrine of the Trinity, if actually encountered and meditated upon, is made to order to break down the binary system of the mind. God is three and one at the same time? The Trinity makes us patient before mystery and humbles our dualistic minds, even though the doctrine of Trinity was at the very center of Christian faith. Most of us did not allow it to change our consciousness. We did not let the principle of three undo our dualistic principle of two. We simply believed it to be the nature of God and then shelved it, as we did most doctrines. Only the mystics tended to relate to God in a Trinitarian way, and often passionately so. Augustine, Bonaventure, Julian of Norwich, and the Cappadocian Fathers. I am certain that the future of Christian mysticism will be strongly Trinitarian. An honest Trinitarianism actually opens up interfaith dialogue and respect, because now we can admit that God is total mystery, both transcendent and immanent, a flowing God of which Jesus is a part. God is a verb more than a noun. If there is indeed one God of all the earth, then it is this one God who is breaking through in every age and culture. Monotheists should be the first to recognize that truth is one, Ephesians 4:4-6, and that God is all in all, 1 Corinthians 15:28. As Rumi said, there are a thousand ways to kneel and kiss the ground. Different religions use different words to describe essentially the same change of consciousness that is necessary to see things in their fullness. Many writers in the early Christian era called the necessary perceptual shift away from the dualistic judging and separate self. Buddhists called it meditation, sitting, or practice. Hesychastic orthodoxy called it prayer of the heart. Sufism called it ecstasy. Hasidic Judaism called it living from the divine spark within. Vedantic Hinduism spoke of it as non-dual knowing, or simply breathing. Native religions founded in communion with nature itself, or the Great Spirit, through dance, ritual, and sexuality, Owen Barfield called this original participation. Dualistic thinking is the well-practiced pattern of knowing most things by comparison. And for some reason, once you compare or label things, that is, judge them, you almost always conclude that one is good and the other is less good, or even bad. In the first half of life, this provides ego boundaries and clear goals, which creates a nice, clean, provisional personality. But it is not close to the full picture that we call truth. Dualistic thinking works only for a while to get us started, but if we're honest, it stops being helpful in most real-life situations. It is fine for teenagers to think that there is some moral or supernatural superiority to their chosen baseball team, their army, their ethnic group, or even their religion or gender, but one hopes that later in life they learn that such polarity is just an agreed-upon game. Your frame should grow larger as you move toward the big picture in which one God creates all and loves all, both Dodgers and Yankees, blacks and whites, Palestinians and Jews, gays and straights, Americans and Afghanis. Non-dualistic thinking, or both and thinking, is the benchmark of our growth in the second half of life. This more calm and contemplative seeing does not appear suddenly, but grows almost unconsciously over many years of conflict, confusion, healing, broadening, loving, and forgiving reality. It emerges gradually as we learn to incorporate the negative, learn from what we used to exclude, or as Jesus put it, forgive our enemies, both within and without. You no longer need to divide the field of every moment between up and down, totally right or totally wrong, for or against. It just is what it is. This inner calm allows you to confront what must be confronted with even greater clarity and incisiveness. This stance is not at all passivity. It is, in fact, the essential link between true contemplation and skillful action. The big difference is that your small and petty self is now out of the way. And if God wants to use you or love you, which God always does, God's chances are far better now. Let us take this moment to connect to what is. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. The term alternative orthodoxy is a phrase I learned from Richard Rohr, having to do with emphasis upon lifestyle itself more than mere verbal correctness. The gospel wants us to do the gospel, to live lives that are simple, loving, joyful, and nonviolent. But I believe that the reason we lost this alternative orthodoxy is because we first lost our alternative non-dual consciousness. We read everything inside of a quick and easy conformity with one right side of most questions, which kept us in the world of words instead of our own experience. And it usually did not emphasize actual experience, which some call orthopraxy. The contemplative mind does not hide behind words, which are by nature dualistic, but is in immediate contact with reality, people, and events as they are, and without an ideological overlay, having your conclusions before the fact. Alternative consciousness is largely letting go of my mind's need to solve problems, to fix people, to fix myself, to rearrange the moment because it's not to my liking. When that mind goes, another non-dualistic mind is already there waiting. We realize it is actually our natural way of seeing. It's the way we thought as children before we started judging and analyzing and distinguishing things one from another. As Helen Luke says, the coming to consciousness is not a discovery of some new thing. It is a long and painful return to that which has always been. You cannot experience the non-dual mind without letting go of the dualistic mind, at least for a while. For most people who have thought dualistically for a long period of time, it feels like dying, it feels like losing, it feels like letting go of control, which is exactly why contemplatives consistently called it darkness and knowing by darkness. This is surely why many people do not move to more mature stages of prayer. They'd rather stay in the mind, which is largely commenting and arguing between conflicting or competing ideas. Note that I said you must let go of your dualistic mind at least for a while. You eventually have to return there to get most ordinary jobs accomplished, but even those you will now do in a less compulsive or driven way. Contemplation leads you to have simple, clear eyes, common sense faith, a combination of humility and quiet confidence, and a loving energy that makes whatever you say quite compelling. It also allows you to deal with complex issues with the same simplicity and forthrightness. The contemplative, non-dualistic mind withholds from labeling things or categorizing them too quickly, i.e. judging, so it can come to see them in themselves apart from the words or concepts that become their substitutes. Humans tend to think that because they agree or disagree with the idea of a thing, that they have realistically encountered the thing itself. Not at all true, says the contemplative. It is necessary to encounter the thing itself. Presence is my word for this encounter, a different way of knowing and touching the moment. It is a much more vulnerable position and leaves us without a full sense of control, which is why many will not go there. In some ways, presence is the one thing necessary, see Luke 10:42, and perhaps the hardest thing of all. Just try to keep your heart open, your mind without division or resistance, and your body not somewhere else. Such simple presence is the practical daily task of all mature religion and all spiritual disciplines. Once you are present and accounted for, you grow from everything, even the problematic and difficult things. If your presence is wrong, you will not recognize the real presence, even in the Eucharist. The presence will be there, it always is, but you won't be. It's been said that it was much easier for Jesus to teach bread and wine what it is than to teach humans who always resist their deepest and simplest identity. Ultimate reality cannot be seen with any dual operation of the mind where we eliminate the mysterious, the confusing, and anything scary, unfamiliar, or outside our comfort zone. Dualistic thinking is not naked presence to the presence, but highly controlled and limited seeing. With such software, we cannot access things like infinity, God, grace, mercy, and love, the necessary and important things. I would not respect any God I could figure out with my limited, rational mind. St. Augustine said the same thing in the 5th century. If you understand it, then it is not God. Si comprehenderes, non est Deus. Let us take this moment to rest in naked presence. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. The early Christian tradition has a long tradition of teaching contemplation or non-dual thinking. It is very clear in the Desert Fathers and Mothers, in Celtic Christianity, and in the Eastern Church's Philokalia. Contemplation was taught directly or indirectly in the monastic history of all the ancient Christian orders, for example by Dionysius, John Cassian, and the famous monastery of St. Victor in Paris, and by those such as Bonaventure, Francisco de Osuna, and the unknown author of The Cloud of Unknowing. We know non-dual consciousness was systematically taught until as late as the 13th century, usually among Benedictines or Cistercians. The early Franciscans benefited from this ancient understanding. The Rhineland Dominicans beautifully exemplified it, and the Carmelites gathered it from their ancient history in Palestine at Mount Carmel. Its final flower, even supernova of expression, was in Teresa of Avila and John of the Cross in the 16th century, who retaught contemplation at great cost. Most of our Western mystics exemplified contemplation, as did Jesus, much more than they actually taught it directly. Maybe this is part of the reason we lost it, and why good theological teaching and practice is now so important today. But after the fights of the Reformation, and after the over-rationalization of the 17th and 18th century Enlightenment, we all became very defensive and circled the wagons around our rational arguments, wanting to prove we were smart and could win arguments with the new secularism. We religious folks imitated the rationalist while using pious Christian vocabulary. Our own doctrines, such as transubstantiation, biblical inerrancy, and papal infallibility, were henceforth presented in a dualistic, argumentative way. It was no longer non-dual consciousness, but dualistic thinking about deep Christian beliefs, which frankly inspires no one and drives many away from Christianity. Most priests were educated this way until the much-needed reforms of Vatican II in the 1960s. Thomas Merton, 1915-1968, was key in reintroducing the contemplative mind to the Western world. Now it is again taught all over the world under different names. Despite the centuries without systematic teaching of non-dual consciousness, I think many have always come to the contemplative mind as the fruit of great suffering or great love. These are the quickest ways to destabilize the self-referential ego. Those transformed by life and grace find themselves thinking simply, clearly, and in non-argumentative ways without recognizing how they got there. They come to enjoy God, others, and even themselves, and do not need to pick fights in their minds about everything. It is such a pleasant way to live. Read Philippians 2, verses 1 through 4, where the non-dual mind is on full display, which then leads to the inspired and self-emptying hymn of verses 5 through 11, where Paul tells us that we now have the same mind which is in Christ Jesus. I believe the contemplative non-dual mind is indeed the mind of Christ. Paul also describes this in Philippians 4, verses 4 through 7, and in 1 Corinthians 2 and 3, lest you think this is not scriptural. Jesus both lived and exemplified this non-dual mind during his 40 days in the desert and his frequent visits to the quiet and lonely places. For example, Mark 1:35 and Luke 4:42. We in the West are naturally educated in dualistic thinking, so much so that we call it thinking. We think being able to make distinctions is what it means to be intelligent or rational. Most of our college professors love to make distinctions for us and teach us how to do the same. We have lost the older tradition that there are some things previous to, and even more important than, the making of distinctions. In fact, the distinguishing of everything from other things is part of the problem. Distinctions are largely made in the mind with words, and that has many positive and necessary aspects. But it also carries a bit of untruth, because you would do well to first see the similarities and deep identities of things before you make distinctions between them. I like to say you must always begin with yes rather than with no. Even ancient religion saw that its job was to introduce people to an alternative way of thinking. We now call the practice of that other way of thinking meditation or contemplation. Contemplation is meeting reality in its most simple and immediate form. The only way to do that is to get rid of your mental grids of judging, critiquing, and comparing. Every major religion at its more mature levels is trying to give you some kind of method to compartmentalize this dualistic mind. You do not fully process the moment by judging it, analyzing it, or differentiating it. You must use a different processor. You must first respect anything for being actually what it is, as it is. Like a clean mirror, you just reflect it back without any added distortions or filters. Then you can see in their primal unity as both one and yet still distinct. What a miracle this is! The East is better at this than we are. Mark Nepo explains the non-dual brilliance of an ancient Chinese saying, not two. Almost 1400 years ago, Sing Tsan, one of the first Chinese sages we know of, offered this brief retort to those who pestered him for advice. To reach accord, just say not two. This reply is as pertinent as it is mysterious. To make sense of it, you need to understand what isn't said. That everything that divides and separates removes us from what is sacred, and so weakens our chances for joy. How can this be? Well, to understand this, we must first open ourselves to an even deeper truth, that everything, you and I, and the people we mistrust, and even the things we fear, everything at heart follows the same beat of life pulsing beneath all the distractions and preferences we can create. Once divided from the common beat of life, we are cut off from the abundance and strength of life, the way an organ cut off from the body dies. So to find peace, to live peace, we need to keep restoring our original oneness. We need to experience that ancient and central beat which we share with everything that exists. Let us take this moment to restore our original oneness. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in the silence. Be still for 1 minute. The practice this week is titled Om. Chanting as contemplative practice naturally draws our focus to the present and calms the dualistic mind. The very physical act of breathing and forming sounds brings body and mind together. Chant has a place in many sacred traditions, from Gregorian melodies to Native American drumming to the polyrhythmic chants of West Africa. There are as many ways to chant as there are bodies and vocal cords. You may enjoy exploring different kinds of chant, or even creating your own as a way of meditating and strengthening the non-dual mind. Perhaps the simplest, most familiar chant is Om. In the Hindu tradition, Om is the original and basic vibration of the created world, the sound that holds all other sounds. This mantra is also called Pranava in Sanskrit, meaning it infuses all of life and fills our prana, breath. Om represents the fullness of reality and encompasses all things. It has no beginning and no end. You might practice chanting this single syllable alone or in a group, from 5 minutes to more than 20, followed by a time of silence. Begin by sitting tall and straight so you can breathe deeply. Inhale, and on your exhalation, vocalize the three syllables of Om, A-U-M, on a single tone. Feel the sound moving upward with your breath, beginning in your belly, ah, moving to your chest, oh, vibrating your lips and navel cavity, mmm. Take another deep breath and sing Om, slowly shaping the vowels and closing your mouth to a hum. Repeat the chant as many times as you wish, letting all other thoughts and sensations disappear. If you are distracted, return your focus to breath and sound and the way it feels in your body. When you are ready, let the chant subside into silence. Thank you for being with me. May you come to know the love with which we live our lives is the life of God within us. It is the divine, indestructible core of our being. Blessings to all.